The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Sparkling water, lemon, osmosis, carbonated, filtered, distilled. See, in trouble.
Super psyched to be with you today. You're listening to And So It Flows. I'm your Super Waterman Ambassador for Water. We're here at WTBR-FM Pittsfield Community Radio 88.1 WSBR in Lee. And anywhere you can get your podcasts from, like Amazon, Apple, YouTube.
In the abundance of water.
Also have a Substack.
Food will.
Super psyched. We got a great guest today. Going to be having a conversation with Reverend Mike Denton over at the United Church of Christ. And he goes around other places too. I think he's also at a church in Canaan. But United Church of Christ has a long history in this region and all the way back to the Mayflower. So it's a boat church. Yeah, gotta love it. We'll be talking to him a little bit later in the show, so stay tuned for that godly conversation of spirit and otherwise. Super psyched to be with you. You're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. Got a little bit of music coming your way. Let's see what we got here. Appropriately named by the Counting Crows, God of Ocean Tides. You're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O.
Close the door on a short night. Lift the lid on the daylight. 6:09 West Tennessee time. And I buy all my days at the same place where the girl sells her nights to God of Ocean Tides. All night long, writing poems to California, melodies of failure, and the people I have known. Away, meanwhile, somewhere west of Carolina, in a congregation of strangers, we're digging holes to China. Then we pray to our reflections in the water when it rises. I said, headlights pin the highway down, Jesus spins the world around, and I'll spend all my tomorrows coming down. Goodbye, all my days. I know I said I never loved you, but I might just try again tonight. Truck stops and river guides, gas stations of the cross, following a ghost, following a ghost. I pray the water wash away the memories and the cost. Carry me south to the sea, along with your memories of me. We are born in the water, and I will return to thee. Colored lights and birthday cakes, candle wax on paper plates. Breathe the water. Oh, hush it by, hush it by. You can see through water. Oh, way up to the sky. God's of water, God's of rain, cover up the sun again. We are crossing it, Mississippi line, and I tried all my days to love you just the way hoped I might, but I'm leaving here tonight. I can't remember yesterday. I tried. If I said I could, I lied.
We'll be right back.
to get a glimpse beyond this illusion. I was soaring ever higher, but I flew too high. Though my eyes could see, I still was a blind man. Though my mind could think, I still was a madman. I hear the voices when I'm dreaming. I can hear them say, carry on, my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry.
You are listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O right here from Pittsfield, the only rock and roll show for water on the entire planet, right here from the Berkshires to all around our big blue marble. Super psyched to be with you. You're gonna, in a couple of minutes, we're going to be speaking with Reverend Mike Denton and some of his spiritual inspiration. Along the way, Reverend Mike Denton is a pastor, reverend over at the United Church of Christ, and he normally is doing lots of his spiritual stuff over at 110 South Street. He also does some stuff for the larger organization as well as a church in Canaan. He'll be with us in just a couple of minutes, so tune in. We're going to talk about the flow of spirit and other water-related items. Super psyched to be with you. Got a little bit of water news coming your way, and let's go take a peek at that. This is from the Berkshire Eagle, a local paper of record, and this is by a really great journalist by the name of Talia Lissauer. And she recently wrote an article going over the 100-year saga of getting water to the village of Housatonic and Housatonic Water Works. Well, Great Barrington is getting those wheels of slow motion in motion. It's kind of like time lapse. Great Barrington, Housatonic Water Works ask for state's help to determine a fair purchase price for the privatized water utility. Privatized water utility. I added privatized because it is a private water utility at this time. Okay. In Great Barrington, the town and Housatonic Water Works are asking for the state's help in determining a fair purchase price for the embattled water system. Embattled is an understatement. I am editorializing this story, so just so you know, it's coming from the heart of your Super Waterman Ambassador for Water. Great Barrington and Housatonic Water Works agreed to file a joint petition with the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court to ask the State Department of Public Utilities to determine how much the town should pay to acquire the system. Town Manager Liz Hargrove said in a press release, while both parties have engaged in efforts to reach a mutually agreed upon purchase price, they may remain far apart on a fair and equitable acquisition price, the press release said. As a result, the next step, as outlined in state law and company governing charters, provides a structured and impartial path forward. End quote. The review would include evidence submission, hearings, and a legal briefing, according to the release, and both parties ask that the review be completed within 15 months. It's a year and 3 months. More time. For decades, many, some say 10, Housatonic residents have reported persistent episodes of discolored water. A 2020 study found a root of the problem comes from manganese contamination, and it's worse during the warmer months. Fixing the problem would require several million dollars overhaul of the 16.6 miles of mostly iron pipes, a majority of which date back to when the company was founded in the late 1800s. Well, there's a lot to the story. You want to look it up at the Berkshire Eagle, their website, and get to that. A little bit of editorializing in that space is, number one, another 15 months. Number two, hearings. Number three, value of something that has been sold over time that some people would say is unmarketable, you know. And there may and should be some kind of restitution for the people who had to live with that showing up in the purchase price, such that there's a known here that the water was and has been and still continues to be questionable in that space. And what one good thing out of it is the town of Great Barrington has come up with some way for people to be given back money for money they spent either on bottled water or for a water treatment system that they put in. I believe that's up to $1,500. Now, why is this important, and why look at this here? Because this is the tip of the iceberg. if you think your town, your city does not have money to take care of the water systems, you are correct because it's being used to make things that go boom in the night. And what also it impacts health and well-being and is for people. And we want to actually start to take a look at how do you create a world that supports being alive. And with that said, on to the next thing. I have a cool little thing. Let me see if I could find it. A nice little comedy clip. This is from Wild Hogs. It's a really cool little comedy clip. Some kid caught a lobster.
Last one, it smells like Uncle Eddie.
Oh, hell no.
Hope you guys don't mind some company. Minivan is getting a little crowded.
You know, there's a much shallower creek for kids just up the canyon there a little bit.
No, my kids like to dive. Marky, show this guy your dive.
No!
If you put your arms out like this, he does a backflip.
Don't do that. It's not a good idea.
Oh, hello. You gentlemen like potato salad? We've got extra.
The kids are coming.
No. Oh, guys, you can't swim over here. Crawfish, big crawfish, they're snapping it.
Crawfish? Let me see if I can catch one.
See? He's looking for crawfish.
He's going to find a couple of them.
Where is he?
Cooper, Ava, let's get out of the water. Find a new spot.
Why, you? This is such a nice... Oh, my God.
I bet her potato salad was really good.
Well, we were sitting on a truck bed when it started raining. She said, I don't mind, got him dancing in a white sundress. Couldn't even find one dry thread, my own. Just to, 'cause a girl like her on a night like this make a man wanna stay right where he is. A shovel in the way, your green eyes are glowing, I'm holding on tight, praying and hoping this truck battery dies, so the road's too muddy to drive. Won't stay right here all night, if the good old spill in that creek will rise. Well, next thing I know, I have a blue jeans hanging. Smiling at me, pulling me in out with the creek bimbis in the yellow moonlight, making fishing in the dark come to life. Get a girl like her on a night like this, make a man want to stay right where he is. A shovel in the way, your green eyes are glowing, I'm holding on tight, praying and hoping this truck battery dies, so the road's too muddy to drive. Want to stay right here all night.
Storming, I was falling fast through the Nurnhart, Gordon like a dirt road, Daytona in my heart. And we ain't even got to the best part.
We didn't have a towel, didn't have dry clothes. She was smiling and saying, hold me, I'm cold. We made a blanket out of that sundress. And the radio won't even let me tell you the rest. 'Cause a girl like her on a night like this make a man wanna stay right where he is. A shovel in the way, your green eyes are glowing.
You are listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. That was Connor Smith with a little Creek Will Rise, honoring the sticks that are out here in the Berkshires, because country music is a big thing around here as well. Not that we're not Northeasterners and we don't like, you know, rock or rap or other things, but every now and then, good country music really makes it happen. Super psyched to be with you. You're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O here at 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield Community Radio and 88.1 WSBR in Lee. Super psyched to have in studio a reverend, man of the cloth. Is that appropriate for United Church of Christ, or is that only reserved for the Catholic
world? Some people use that term, so it but not a lot.
Okay.
So I haven't heard it for a while, so congratulations.
So, Reverend Mike Denton, super psyched to have you. You know, we were talking before you just came on, and I think the game of spirit is, you know, it can allow for some feeling of a well of life, energy, that kind of thing, but... Mm-hmm. Why don't you tell a little people, you know, tell our water-loving listeners and perhaps God-fearing and God-not-relating to folks a little bit about yourself, you know? What brings you to this work?
Sure. So, first of all, just thanks for having me on your show, so I appreciate that. It's a kindness, and I appreciate it. I think there's... Some of the interest in some of the work and some of the pieces around water really come from where I grew up. So I grew up in the Cleveland, Ohio area. And during the time when things like the Cuyahoga River caught on fire a couple times, and folks were really just starting to figure out the kind of mess we'd gotten ourselves into between the Great Lakes and between the rivers that are around us. That was sort of during the time when some of the first warnings about don't eat this kind of fish or don't eat this fish at all from this place or that place started to go out.
Yeah, that was when, in like the 1969-ish
caught. Yeah, caught on three times. So I was born in 68. One was pretty soon after I was born, but there was a couple times in the 70s too.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it was a different kind of moment. And it was during a time and a place when they were trying to figure out how to deal with the industry that had been there. A lot of it was the steel industry.
Yep.
In that space, and trying to figure out what had happened to the water and how the water had been used. There's always the assumption, I think, that I think we still carry with us some that water could take care of anything, and that if you put something in water, there was so much of it that you could never fill it up with pollutants. And I think it was around that time when we really started to figure out what we'd been doing to ourselves and what we'd be doing to the environment in an entirely different way.
And continue to do so unabated. Not completely unabated. There are some good rules and laws in place. Yeah. How does that figure into the world of, like, I want to bring spirit or religiosity, let's call it, into this conversation as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so you have this background in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And did you grow up in a religious or a spiritual space or a family?
Yeah, I'm something like sixth generation minister. So grew up in the United Methodist Church and then found my way over to the United Church of Christ over time. But I would say that I know some people's experience of religion has been pretty oppressive in the way that they felt sort of forced into that box that didn't always fit for them. And the way I've described it to other people is that my experience was much more invitational. You were welcome to be part of it. You were invited to be part of it. Were there always some folks who sort of had a little bit more of the you should? Yeah. But there was a lot of people that wanted to share what they had and thought what they had to share was a lovely thing. And that was more the experience that I had. So
I'm
fortunate not to have had some of the experience that other people have had with religion.
Yeah. Totally, totally. Anything that is, if it provides some kind of good experience... Most people naturally share it, like a natural share.
Exactly.
And, you know, I think it's important to pay attention to that such that it shows up as an invitation. I've had the experience personally when things are like, okay, we're bashing you over the head. You have to do forcing an outcome, and it doesn't feel like you have an invitation.
No, for me, that was not the path that helped me find my way to spirit, to God, to all those things that have become really important in my life.
I would put it down like this. Okay, so if a statey pulls you over, the state police, for those who don't understand, who also need to stay hydrated, if they're coming up to you with a speeding ticket, that's not an invitation. That's more like you got to pay it or deal with it. Invite, in your cases, you know, just look at, you know, like it feels like, wow, this is pretty great. So you get to choose. At what age did you choose to go that way?
Let's see. I'd say there was probably a time after I graduated from high school and was in college for a good 2-3 years where I really stepped away from religion. I still had a lot of respect for it and what it could do, but also looked for some other things that might be out there. It might be along the path. And so I don't think that's unusual for a lot of people to sort of have that be their time of exploration. I was living in Boulder, Colorado at the time and was still trying to find my path, what that might be. And so lived across the street from a Buddhist community and talked with one of the monks over there and said, you know, I'm thinking about becoming Buddhist. And he's like, well, why would you want to know that, do that? And I was like, well, you know, this. And he said, you already know the language of Christianity. He says, this is another language and, you know, it's a good one to learn. But why don't you try to dive more deeply into the language you already know? So I didn't like that, but I was intrigued by it. So hung out with some other folks that didn't talk as much. So hung out with the Quakers for a few years and really thought that was going to be the place where I found my home. It had the mix of contemplation and social justice commitments and sort of an openness, an invitational way of doing faith that I was intrigued by. And then what really changed for me is I was in a church in Boulder. This was during a time when there was a lot of anti-gay legislation that was sort of popping up. Mm-hmm. And Boulder, Colorado had been one city that had said within Colorado that they welcomed people regardless of who they loved. And there was a state resolution that had been put up on the ballot that would basically take away a city or municipality's right to be able to do that. And the person who was the pastor at the church where I was attending, and my ex-wife was on staff, at that particular time, he preached in opposition to the state proposition that would have taken away that inclusive message and that inclusive ability. And when he did, there was a few people that, you know, stepped out and stepped away while he was preaching. But then they had communion. And when they had communion, people broke a piece of bread off the same loaf and dipped it into the same cup. And even some of the people that had walked out came back in and they took a piece of bread off the same loaf of bread and dipped it in the same cup. And I started to see communion in a different sort of way. And that was my door back into church again, where it was really sort of this invitational piece where the rituals had more meanings that I had allowed them to give mm-hmm. and have in the past.
Yep.
So I started to find my way more into liturgical settings.
Liturgical. What does that actually mean for those people who may not understand that word?
Great
what
question.
Does liturgical mean?
Well, interestingly, the word liturgy or liturgical means work of the people.
Wow.
So the idea was that liturgy was something that the people really formed and built and made together. So that's really where it came from.
Wow. That's pretty deep. You know, and you find yourself in a city that has gone, in my view, and it's in the view of others, but not everybody. In my view, it has gone through the post-industrial ringer.
Hmm.
So the impact on people is a great place to look at liturgy. You know, like, how do you, like, not just reach people, you know, whatever that provides, the liturgical message or the liturgy. Now, one of the things that you were saying prior to you being, you know, on the air now.
Yeah.
Is something about Matthew Fox.
Yeah.
And how, you know, that was a different segue than I wanted to take. But mm-hmm. given that liturgy is for the people.
Yeah. Sure.
Matthew Fox, for those who don't remember or know, he was pretty big in the
late 80s,
late
early
80s, 90s mm-hmm. into the early aughts.
Mm-hmm.
Timothy James Matthew, an American priest and theologian, formerly a member of the Dominican Order of the Catholic Church and became a priest of the Episcopal Church, which is also known as the Church of England, over in England, followed its expulsion from the order, the Dominican order, in 1993. Now, the timing of that, of being kicked out, I'm not 100% clear, and you don't really know when you're reading Wikipedia if it's clear or there's some bias to it.
Yeah.
What was he talking about? Like, you said you were inspired by him, so, like, what was he speaking to?
Yeah, so so Matthew Fox is one of these authors that I've had sort of a love-hate relationship with. I'd read some of his stuff and be like, oh my gosh, that's so woo-woo, or it just didn't connect with me at all. And then afterwards, I'd keep thinking about it and ended up quoting some of what he talked about. So one of the things that he really talked about a lot was this concept of creation spirituality, sort of this idea that we are in some ways kind of co-creators with God, that God has God's role, we have our role as humanity, and that those roles together help us figure out how to make a more just world for all God's people, a healthier world for all people and all creation. He also mixed it in with a lot of pieces related to art and growing spirituality. Within the tradition that he was in, some of the things that he said were said without necessarily connection with the wider church. And so in his setting, there were folks that started to get upset with him. At one point in time, he was silenced by the church for, I think, about a year.
That's the Catholic Church.
Yeah, Catholic Church at that point. Yeah. I heard him the first time that he came from outside of that moment of being silenced, and he was speaking to a convention of folks within, predominantly Catholic folks, who were in sort of the same vein of Catholicism that he was. And he first walked up to the podium with somewhat of a standing ovation, and then clears his throat, straightens his papers, and his first statement after coming out of the silencing for a year was, as I was saying before I was so rudely interrupted. and then the applause started again. So I think that some of what he was tossed out of the church for, in his case, was some of the things that he believed and some of the things that he said. But also within a community that really values the authority of different people and sort of was in a permission-giving place, he didn't always do that, and that made people upset too. And so I'm not exactly sure why he was asked to step away or really forced out, but I imagine it was something along that line.
Yeah, I would bet. When I was reading of him and was reading some of his books, I was always left with the game of co-creation. It gives you a say in how things are going to go in your own life and perhaps the lives of others, and gives you some power in a world that has been, I would just say, there's been a lot of suppression in the last bunches of years. And to be able to say, I have a say in this, could start to shift the balance back to people having a say. And just touching on that, I think, is super important.
I think the piece around having a say and that people have power in it is important. And then as soon as people recognize that they have power, people also need to recognize that they have a responsibility.
Yeah.
And that was part of the reality of sort of that co-creation ethos that he taught. It was really sort of that idea that we don't just have a responsibility for the healing of creation as co-creators, or we don't just have the ability to be co-creators and be part of the healing of creation. We have a responsibility for it.
Yeah, especially if you have power. Let's say you have the power to create a job for yourself, or power to create a business, or the power to create a new relationship with someone who you wrote off.
Yeah.
Or, whatever power that is. Mm-hmm. That eliminates the need to be jealous. That eliminates the need to have envy for others. Because you know through new experience that you can actually do the thing or create the thing that was just you were either angry about or jealous about even just before it happened. So I think that's a wonderful space because there won't be the other person has that thing, I want that thing. They'll be more like, okay, what do I have to do to have it happen?
I think there is that in there, and I think that piece around responsibility around it is key too. Because if someone tries to stand in the way of something that you're responsible for, that's a moment of resistance. If it's caring for a family, caring for a friend, if someone gets in the way of you fulfilling that responsibility, then you have a responsibility to resist. And I think that's part of what he was calling for, too.
Yep. Anyway, great. Thanks. It was a good person to be inspired by. For those just tuning in, you're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. I am your super waterman, Leslie Gabriel, your ambassador for water. Check us out. Go to any of the podcast channels. Look for And So It Flows. Share it. Subscribe. Leave a nice little comment. And then it'll really, really help the independent media that comes out of WTBR 89.7 Pittsfield Community Radio to be seen around the world, because the Berkshires has a say in the matter, specifically Pittsfield, and gotta love it. So there's a congregation here in Pittsfield, 110 South Street, and let's go into the before times. So, sure. The before times would be what's the origin of the United Church of Christ? Like historically in the United States, where does it come from?
This can be a very long answer, and I'll try to give you the shorter one.
Give the short one.
So just to sort of take one step back, in 1957, the United Church of Christ was formed by four different denominations that came together. One was the Congregational Church. One was called the Christian Church. One was the Evangelical Church out of Germany, and also the Reformed Church. Those different denominations all had different kind of backgrounds as far as varieties of the immigrant community. Mm-hmm. Some of that, the Congregational Church was one of the earliest denominations within the U.S. So if you look around a lot of towns, particularly in New England, you'll find a lot of churches that have Congregational in their name. Most, but not all, of those churches became affiliated with the United Church of Christ when those four denominations really came together in 1957.
I heard a rumor that it's water-related and it comes from the Mayflower.
Well, there were definitely some folks that were part of some of the earlier settlers, and the only way to get here was really by water.
Boat.
For those who were coming from England or from Germany or from a lot of those different places. So there were tons of folks that crossed the water to come and be present here for sure.
That's great. So that, you know, it's a long storied history. Mm-hmm. My little breakdown with Plymouth Rock is that it's so small. I thought it was huge outcropping, and I go and see it's just literally not so big.
Nope. It looks like a picnic shelter over a rock with
exactly.
a fence around it.
It's exactly.
not,
it's,
yeah,
a
it's
rock.
Not such a big thing. It's a rock.
Yeah. So that being said, you know, so you're doing stuff in the community. What do you think some of the challenges are for the Pittsfield congregation that you're here to see what you could do about it?
Sure. I think there's a couple different things, and I think they're related to challenges that are in Pittsfield and really just a lot of communities. It's not Pittsfield exclusive.
Yeah, no. It's we represent... Yeah. Lots of different post-industrial spaces around the country, around the world.
And where I lived in Cleveland, it was right down the street from the GE plant. So there's definitely some similarities and echoes and recognitions here as there were in other places, too. And even around like the term post-industrial, I think we sometimes have to be careful because there's still industry here.
Oh, sure.
And so recognizing... sometimes when we talk about something being post-industrial, that's one of those times where I almost think that's encouraged to put the responsibility on those in the past, as opposed to dealing with the reality of what we're dealing with within our own community now, as far as industrial-wise, too. But I think the challenge for a lot of communities when they look at themselves as post-industrial is something that's sort of a permanent status. The reality is post-industrial also means that there's a lot of raw materials. And so it's not just about coping with what might seem like the trauma or the challenges of the industry that came before, but what you're going to build with what you have. And that includes your industry. That includes your natural resources. That includes the people. And trying to figure out a way to make something better is what we all have to do. So around here, I think the challenges around water are one of those things that are clear. With the one piece just around the pollution, that's happened in the water, and the ways that people are trying to mitigate that for better and for worse, and with lack of sometimes what they perceive as to be better options. That's part of our ongoing conversation. And the other one that's a growing one that we're not used to talking about in New England is the lack of water. We've been in drought and drought situations for a long time. Unfortunately, the fire that happens in Great Barrington was probably just a hint of what's going to be coming in the future if we continue to deal with some of the lack of water. That's part of the reality around
here. How water is used, how it's, you know, perhaps wasted.
Yep.
And then how dry climates allow, you know, and the taking down of forestation for one of the reasons it stays wet. Like, and we have so much greenery simply because the trees that are here and hold the water down. And I think that's one of the benefits of having that. But one of the things I wanted to get to is like, okay, so at the institution called the United Church of Christ, the congregation, are there, like, you came in when?
I've been there for, it'll be 4 years in this September.
Yeah. What are some of the challenges or some of the projects that you're working on there? Sure. What kind of things?
There's several. Like a lot of congregations, our congregation is smaller than it once was. And so when you are dealing with that reality of being smaller than you were at one point or time, you have to sort of readjust your mindset. And again, it's in sort of in the same way that Pittsfield sometimes refers to it solely as post-industrial. You have to look at what you have as either through sort of the lens or the echo of what used to be there, or you have to look at there what the possibilities are now. So I think for our congregation, that's been one of the things that we've been, you know, working on and figuring out. On the same hand, there's some great things that the congregation does. One of the programs that's currently within the building is the Pittsfield Community Food Pantry, which at this point is Berkshire County's largest food pantry.
Really?
Yeah.
How many people are coming in?
We're serving about 1,500 households every month.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's around 8,000, 9,000 people.
Are you seeing an uptick or downtick?
Uptick. When I first arrived here, again, a little more than 3 years ago, there were about 750 households that were being served. So it's doubled, and it's gone up, and we expect it will continue to go up as far as the as far as the need.
So you're the original pastor and just came off the Mayflower. That gives you
That's the 300 years.
That's the 300 years. I didn't want to jump over that. That's a good piece of humor.
Yep.
Anyway, the so 1,500 folks, families that are
households.
Being taken care of.
Yeah.
And how often is that food pantry serving people?
Mm-hmm. So in some ways it serves people every day. The primary times that the food pantry are open are on Wednesday mornings and Thursday mornings. And there's also a little space on Wednesday afternoons when it's open. And that's when people come to the pantry. We have both food for people to pick up. They can pick up a box and choose from what we have available. They can also, there's also a meal that people make that's a takeaway meal.
Wow.
And so people come and some take that and some don't. But in addition to that, we have folks who do deliveries at different times in the week. So we have over 500 households that are delivered to by all by volunteers on Tuesdays. So that's part of our work, too. And on the days in between, it's stocking and restocking the shelves, closing the shelves, doing fundraising, and all the other things that are needed to be have a program that large.
It seems relevant. It seems important. Yeah. And it seems vital. If those if that food was not available, people would be in much direr straits.
Yeah. I mean, it's all connected.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all around. Food is a right. Water is a right.
Yeah.
Air is a right. Housing is a right. All these things that we need to live are not things that should simply be commodified, but they're a right. They're
something like that people when you commodify it, when you actually make life, there's a certain amount you got to pay your dues or do the work that I get. And then there's the other part where you're knowingly are in a system that's leaving so many people behind.
Yep.
And that's super important to take a look at and the relevance of that. So there's another event also coming up on the 25th?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other right. That's the right around water.
Correct.
And a healthy area. Do you want to say anything about that a little
sure.
bit?
Sure, and I know you have some more information to share with that, too. But Veterans for Peace is holding an event at our congregation on the 25th that really is taking a look at water and the different ways that we use water in this area. It's also taking a look at the connection between the use or the waste of water and some of the industrialization, specifically around militarization.
Yeah.
And in the way that that's resulted in some of the situations that we're in. A lot of times what happens around militarization related to industry is that that sense of urgency is considered so high that that what happens through the process and the toxic processes of putting together weaponry, as that destroys the earth and destroys the air and destroys the water, that's something that people want to deal with later because of what seems to be the immediate crisis that militarization promotes in order to be able to use the resources that they want.
Yeah, it's important to take a look at, being protected is nice, and then at what cost? Mm-hmm. That's also important to take a look at. And is it if we're constantly a hammer and everything's a nail,
right,
instead of like your family,
yeah,
a kid, or your grandmother, or in the area of war, is super important because nobody wants to go being in a war.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anyone who would be interested in having a bomb come through their house.
Mm-hmm.
My family had to deal with that in Budapest.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really not something that you look forward to, having a bomb or bullets coming through your window,
sure,
or tearing down a wall or destroying or killing family members, and that really creates so much more trauma than it's, and that keeps that cycle going. And I think at one point life has to be worth living.
Mm-hmm.
and creating a world around that. So a little more about the event. I'm an associate member of Veterans for Peace. Chris Hedges is going to be there. He's
one of my favorite writers.
Yeah, he's a great writer. Mm-hmm. He's a former Mideast bureau chief for the New York Times.
Yeah.
He started telling the truth, so he got a little bit kicked out of polite society.
Mm-hmm.
But he has, he's still doing a lot of great work. Wrote several books. And then we're also going to have folks from Lee share a little bit about what's going on with a PCB dump. Are there different ways of doing cleanup other than putting a dump there?
Mm-hmm.
And then also health department from representative of the health world is going to speak a little bit more about issues around testing and making that available for people. So we really get a bird's eye view of what people are dealing with, so you have a good way forward.
Yep.
And and allow ourselves to think that we have a say in how it goes moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really super important. So that's the 25th. I think it starts at 1:00. More on that, just Google Chris Hedges, Pittsfield, or United Church of Christ. Deep Dive is also somewhere. We got a couple more minutes. So
sure.
let's say people want to participate around your thinking of creating a co-created Pittsfield.
Mm-hmm.
And bringing spirituality to it, and then also empowerment. How can they get involved? What can they do?
Sure. Part of it is just some simple conversations that we're starting in different places. I hang out at Wander, the coffee shop down on Depot Street, from 8 to 9 every Tuesday morning. And so a lot of folks that come in will have some conversations around that. Also working with United Way, Berkshire Regional Planning Council, Crane Center, and a nonprofit center with the Berkshires, putting together something called Berkshire Grit, where we're trying to have cross-sector conversations from the nonprofit, for-profit, and government to really sort of deal with the moment that we're in, to recognize that things probably are not going to get better immediately. They're going to get worse. And if we have relationships in place, we have a chance of responding together.
Yeah.
So those are a few of the main places. The other way is just come by and stop by at the church sometime. I'd be happy to talk with you more about that, too.
And how is there a way to email or go to the web? What's the website?
We don't have a website for Berkshire Grit yet.
Not the Berkshire Grit.
Oh, for the church?
For the church
itself.
Yeah, sure.
So if you look at uccpittsfield.org, that's uccpittsfield.org. Our website's just in the process of getting updated, but that'll give you some of the basic information you need about us and how to get a hold of me.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. So thanks again for joining our water-loving listeners around the world.
Yeah, thank
you. Super psyched. Looking forward to seeing people participate in the empowerment of the people. Yep. And that's a beautiful thing. You're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. Let's see if we could get this song going. It's a nice little great way to think about water.
I moved across the ocean, floating inside a dream. I drank to drown my sorrows, but now that I learned to swim. It's been too long since I felt so numb and so scared. I wasted all my wishes, wishing we could have been riding on the wild waves for the rest of my days, stuck between the devil and the deep blue sea waves, searching in the maze for God's to pray.
Thanks again for tuning in to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. Let's turn down that ocean behind us. Oh, it's great to have an ocean. Meantime, stay tuned. I'm going to go on a short break for a couple weeks, but we'll be back soon. We love you and love your water, and so it flows.
Lemon city water, sparkling water, lemon. Osmosis, carbonated, filtered, distilled. See, in trouble. Water, water.
in the abundance of water, the fool will get thirsty.